2-minute and 7-second meditation starts now. This one's called change. If you knew that you would die today, if you saw the face of God in love, would you change? If you knew that love can break your heart, when you're down so low you cannot fall, would you change? How bad or how good does it need to get? How many losses? How much regret? What chain reaction? What cause and effect? What makes you turn around? What makes you try to explain? What makes you forgive and forget? What makes you change? If you knew that you would be alone, knowing right, being wrong, would you change? If you knew that you would find a truth that brings a pain that can't be soothed, would you change? Are you so upright you can't be bent if it comes to blows? Are you so sure you won't be crawling? If not for the good, why risk falling? If everything you think you know makes your life unbearable, would you change? If you'd broken every rule and vow, and hard times come to bring you down, would you change? If you knew that you would die today, if you saw the face of God in love, would you change? It's a Tracy Chapman song that's I've been listening to a lot lately, because it's, you know, I've seen people live through some of the craziest, worst stuff and do nothing different. I've seen people construct and build the greatest lives for themselves and tear it all down and not change. And, you know, we've said a lot of things this weekend, and I don't really know how much more I really have to say other than the fact that this process of going through the steps is about change. If you read the spiritual experience in Appendix 2 on page 567 of your big book, I believe on page 567 alone there are 17 different ways that describe change, which are necessary for a spiritual experience. I was blessed with the experience of realizing that there was nothing I could do, there's nothing that I had ever done to make my life a success, and I sat there and had to look in the mirror and realize that I had destroyed everything in the greatest possible way ever, and it was a gift. It was an absolute gift that most people, when if they would have seen it happening, would have thought it was horrific. But that happened in June, and by Thanksgiving, 5 months later, we're frying a turkey at my parents' place, and my brother-in-law asked me, he said, "Would you ever get back together with Sarah? Would you ever consider it?" And I had to sit there for a minute, because the initial reaction was, "Hell no." And then I said, "Well, I guess if she was willing to go through as much of a transformation as I've gone through, I would consider it." And he yells, "That's it! That's it! That's what I'm talking about!" I was like, "What?" And he goes, "You're a different person." He says, "You are not the same person." He said, "Something's happened. You are different." And then I reflect back to a couple years ago when, you know, when you have kids, it's pretty tough to fuck stuff up to the point where they actually don't want anything to do with you. If they're young enough, they really don't remember that you fucked a bunch of stuff up anyways. And so, a couple years ago, my daughter's grilling her mom about, you know, why are you not with dad, because, you know, dad's pretty cool. And Sarah has to tell her, "You know, your dad's not the same person I was married to. The person that you experience today is not that man." And I remember it was probably somewhere in the first 6 to 12 months, I'd gone to work for a new company, and the whole company's in a meeting, and the owner of the company was asking a question, and he really wanted somebody to give him an answer because everybody was kind of afraid to speak up. This guy Chris goes, "Ask Brandon, he always tells the truth." I swear, if I was taking a drink at that moment, I would have like choked on it and spit it across the room, because nobody had ever accused Brandon of telling the truth. It was, if you always want like half to two thirds of the story, ask Brandon, because he'll surely tell you the story with a slant. But you know, when he said that, although I almost choked on it, I came to this realization as I thought through it. I was like, you know, Chris is right. Brandon today tells the truth. And if he tells you something, or he says he's going to do something, you can count on it. And if he doesn't do it, then he's going to fix it. When we get to the 12th step, a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about sponsorship. And it's important, guys. It is so important, because it reveals to you who you are. I can't tell you how many times I wonder why I'm sponsoring a guy, why he's come into my life, and we start having a conversation, or we get to a fifth step, and I'm listening to him, and I'm like, oh, that's what it is. That's why he's here. Can't tell you how many times I've listened to a fifth step. The guy that's reading me the fifth step leaves our meeting feeling better, and I leave thinking to myself, I got some more work to do. Because he's reading a piece of inventory to me, and I'm giving him some considerations around that piece of inventory, and it occurs to me as I'm telling him with that extra file folder I got open over here, that's pretty good advice. Why don't you follow that? And of course, I'm like, shut. I don't want to pay attention to the fact that I'm being a hypocrite while I'm giving them this consideration because I'm not doing the same thing in my life. And when you start to have the awareness and you start to connect with that at a different level, you are forced to either continue to live the same miserable existence or change. And so to me, the third part of the 12th step is so important. Actually practicing these principles in all our affairs. I am confident that if you were to come follow me around for a couple weeks, I'd need a really big vehicle, but if all of you came with me and watched me, I'm confident that you would see that I am who I say I am. I might screw up every once in a while. I may not be completely perfect. But you'll see a person that's really trying to interact with the flow of life and really trying to appreciate people for who they are. We had, the last 2 days, we've had a lady help us at the Waffle House, and God, her energy is fantastic. I mean, I wanted to just give her a big hug when we left today because I realized I might not ever see her again because she was such a wonderful person. And I know before I would have been like, fuck her, she's slow getting us our food or whatever. But I see these things now because they're important to me and because I want to interact with the world. And this concept of doing these living amends, like, no, that those do not exist. The book says direct amends. It's very crystal clear. There's no fucking thing called a living amend. There is a thing called practicing the principles in all your affairs. I can never fully write the way that I treated the woman that I was committed to living with and raising children with for the rest of my life. I can never fix that entirely. But what I can do is if I ever get another opportunity to be a husband, I can be the best husband. I can work the hardest at being a husband. And I feel like I do that. And I've got a woman that deserves me to act that way towards her. And we have hard conversations and we challenge each other. And everything's not perfect all the time. But I'll tell you, I can sit up here and tell you I do not know another person other than maybe like my parents and some older people like that. I do not know another person that has a relationship as good as mine on the planet. I don't. And that's something that I strive for because I screwed one up so bad. But there's that part of me that can't fully feel fixed because of how bad I screwed up the other one. And you know what? The universe has this really cool way of helping me along in that. Is it gives me a bunch of guys to sponsor that either just got kicked out, they're getting ready to be kicked out. They're getting ready to be kicked out and they have no freaking clue that they're getting ready to be kicked out. It happens a ton. Or they're just not capable of having relationships. Those are the four types of guys I sponsor. And I think I told you earlier, two of them are married and have kids. I have a kid now, or on the way to having more kids. The other one's getting ready to get married. And these guys, like, they were incapable of relationships. They were just not. They were so confused. You know, relationships are funny because everything that I thought I knew about relationships, I learned from people that have no idea how to do relationships, right? I started developing my idea of how a relationship worked when I was in middle school from a bunch of other middle school boys. And pretty much through college and getting married, it didn't change much. Wonder why she left. I wonder why she left. So now I have an adult relationship where we live and we grow. I have an adult job that gives me responsibility and flexibility because they trust me. I have access to thousands and thousands of dollars on credit cards, and I don't owe anybody any money. The power company, they loaned me power and I paid them at the end of the month. It's fascinating. Before, they were always calling to get their money. All my credit cards were maxed out. I had to steal from my kid's piggy bank to go get more alcohol. My life does, it almost in no way resembles my old one. And, you know, like the reading that Tarek read about people, you know, they're terrified by the light. And they're terrified by how great they can be. Because I know what miserable existence looks like. I know what my life being terrible looks like. But I don't know what that other one might look like. So I'll stay here. But what if it's better than you thought it could be? What if there's more to it than you thought there could be? When I got married almost 6 years ago to the woman I'm married to today, I mean, I had some buddies that, like, if we needed to dispose of a body, they probably would have helped, not ask questions. I mean, good, solid buddies, right? Like, what the fuck did you do? Okay, I'll grab a shovel, right? And when I got married 6 years ago, the only person outside of family and my boss that were invited to the wedding were people in recovery. They were literally my 10th step buddies. That's it. They and their families. And that wasn't like Brandon's grand plan of, I'm only going to invite recovered people to my wedding. It was just when it was time to pick the people to come, those were the only ones I wanted there. None of those guys that would dispose of the body were there because we didn't have an active relationship. Three of the people that I invited to my wedding, they're still, I believe they're still clean, and four of the people, they're still clean and sober, but our relationship has moved on. And that if I had a wedding today, there would be a different set of people that were invited because things evolve, and that's okay. So change is the cycle of everything. And being able to change enough to be able to help other people is the most important part of my life. My parents are good, solid people that have been together. I want to say that they celebrate, because they got married the day after Christmas, they actually celebrate when they met as kind of their anniversary. And I think they just celebrated 55 years together. Solid people. Raised three kids. Saved up money for retirement. Provided everything that the kids ever needed. Got good friends that they've had for 40 years. And if you met them 10 years ago or if you meet them 10 years from now, they're pretty much going to be the same people. And for them, that's perfect. If you meet me next year, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and you can say that I'm the same person, I'm extremely disappointed with myself. The two guys that came here 5 years ago and did the first workshop here were completely different people than the people sitting in front of you today. Completely different. Our motives, the things that drive us, the things that are important to us, have changed. And I know Tarek well enough to know that when I make that statement, I'm speaking for him too. Because we were willing to change and grow and evolve and become something bigger and better. Not necessarily for us, although that's cool. Is my ability to help other people and to be there for people and to carry a spiritual message and to transform lives in a spiritual way is exponentially better than it was. You see, because today I'm useful. And not just to some people, I can be useful to just about anybody I meet. This was years ago, I was sitting in a restaurant and I was eating my lunch and this thought came over me, these people need your help. I just want to eat lunch. I don't want to help anybody right now. I want to eat lunch. The thought wouldn't leave me. So I got up to throw my trash away and hoping that I could convince my mind that I wasn't needed to have a conversation with these people. And I walked over to them and I said, excuse me. I'm supposed to ask you if you guys need help with something. And they looked up at me, and the guy scooted over on the bench and said, have a seat. And I sat down, and they said, you know, we've actually been discussing whether or not we should keep this house here in Alpharetta for like holidays when the kids come home, or if we should just move to Florida to our place that we have down there. We can afford both of them, but we just can't figure it out. I threw some information their way. Said, I don't know if that helps. And they said, it did. Thank you. And I got up. They said, God bless you. And I walked off. What was that? I was useful to somebody that I don't know who they are, never see them again. I answered some question for them that they were struggling with. And I didn't really even answer their question. I do what I do, which is I told a story and expected them to interpret whatever it was that they were supposed to get out of it. And that's what I do. Because I don't know what you need. I get people calling me all the time asking me questions. I tell them a story. And they're like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm like, I don't know. Get something out of it. Yeah. And they usually do. So I hope, actually I know, because a couple of you have actually said something, I know that we've lit a fire in some of you that will remain burning. Did we stay with the under? Okay.
So far.
Okay. So we were enlightened to something that we were not aware of before, but apparently one of the things that happens when Tarek and I come is either we're so boring or we're so challenging or we're so disturbing that people leave because we're here. Because our light must be so bright that it scares them away and they want to crawl back into the darkness. And apparently that hasn't happened this weekend. And you know what? We can see it. Because I would say, for the most part, this has been the most engaged group in terms of eyes on us that I've experienced here. There's a couple pockets back there that I'm not real sure about. Just I can't see all the time. But for the most part, I think it's under five that I, in my head, have kind of counted that I aren't really engaged. And that's cool. There's a part of my thinking mind that's really proud of myself because I was able to engage you in a way that you kept paying attention. But the reality is, it's not me. It's you. And it's your spirit engaging with my spirit that thinks that I got something for you. And I think that's kind of cool. And when you travel this path long enough, there will be people that will come into your life that your spirits touch somehow, and they become very important to you, and then they leave. And some of them come back. There's a guy I sponsor who was the first guy to take me through the steps. And when I was 4 years sober on Taco Tuesday, I sent a text out because I was celebrating 4 years of continuous sobriety, and to me, 4 years was the most fascinating number of years that I've ever had put together, because I'm not kidding you guys, 4 days absolutely 100% was my record of staying dry. 4 days. There was always some reason within 4 days that I started drinking again. There's always some reason. So when I hit 4 years, it was like, what? I'm a guy that couldn't do 4 days, and I got 4 years now? And it was a big moment to me. So I sent a text to a bunch of people that were important in my life to get me there. And one of them was the first guy that had taken me through the steps, who had less sobriety than I did. He had 1 month less sobriety, but he was three steps ahead of me. And so he sponsored me. And he got me all the way up through steps 10 and 11. And then he decided he wasn't an alcoholic anymore. Like, literally, had a conversation with him, and he said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I just think I'm a pothead. And he said, so I'm out. Okay. And then I watched his life through Facebook and things like that kind of just deteriorate and fall apart. And I sent him a text that said, you know, I thank God and the people, including you, that have come into my life that made a change that allowed me to be celebrating 4 years today. And he texted back and he said, I'm coming back. Will you be my sponsor? And then that was June 15th. And on June 22nd, he was struck sober, and he's been sober ever since, and he's one of my best friends. So you don't know how this stuff's going to work. But being useful, being a difference maker is so important. And I like to listen to this song by a group called Need to Breathe. It's called Difference Maker. And it says, isn't it amazing how a man can find himself alone, calling to the darkness for an answer that he's never known? Isn't it amazing how a God can take a broken man, let him find a fortune, let him ruin it with his own two hands? And he climbs up on a hill, on a rock on which he stands, and he looks down at the crowd, looks down at his hands, and he says, I'm a difference maker. I'm a difference maker. I'm the only one who speaks to him. I am the friendliest of friends of God. Isn't it amazing how a man can find himself alone, call into the darkness for an answer that he's never known? Isn't it amazing how a God can take a broken man, Let him find a fortune, let him ruin it with his own two hands. I am on the fence about nearly everything I've seen, and I have felt the fire be put out by too much gasoline. We're all strangers passing through a place that, and time after noon, life is but a vision in a window that we're peeking through. A helpless conversation with a man who says he cares a lot. It's a passive confrontation about who might throw a punch or not. We are all transgressors. We're all sinners. We're astronauts. So if you're beating death, then raise your hand, but shut up if you're not. Because I am a difference maker. And I am the friendliest of friends of God. If you want to hook up with that thing called God and become a difference maker, then please come with us. Because we need you. All of you. Your very specific experience and story is so incredibly important for the evolution of all of mankind. And we'll do it without you, but we would really prefer that you came along and started making a difference yourself. So thanks for listening to me, and I appreciate your attention.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm Tarek, I'm an addict.
Tarek!
You know, when I first got clean, there were two things that changed about me quickly. The first being after I did that first fifth step, that my default mode was, how did I get myself in this situation? Right? When it didn't matter what the circumstances were, it was almost programmed into me because of the way my fourth and fifth step unfolded, that I was going to take responsibility for all my troubles. So every time something was wrong in my life, or things weren't going the right way, or a relationship was sideways, it was always, okay, what did I do back here that has now got me here? All right, that's a psychic change there, for a guy who was always assigning blame prior to going through that process. The second thing that changed was my desire to sacrifice my personal time to help people. I mean, I remember in my first year, and I'm not saying this to brag, I was sponsoring so many guys at one point, I'd have to meet with three or four on a Sunday, and I literally would spend like from 11 a.m. until like 7 or 8 p.m. working with guys. And I did this like weekend in, weekend out. But again, my ego was very much involved in that process. And looking back on it, I don't know if I did a disservice to some of those men. Some got sober, some didn't get sober. I don't know what to tell you. I wasn't involved in them getting sober. I was just this guy holding up some signs and said, that way. You know? That's what we do. We point people in the right direction. But those are two phenomenal changes in my book. For a guy that was as selfish and self-centered as I was, and as irresponsible as I was. And so I gave a lot of my time to this 12-step work, and I fell in love with it. And I've been doing it ever. I've been doing it since late April, early May of 2008, and I have not stopped. Both you and the new man, this is page 100 in our big book, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, and when they say if you persist, what are they talking, what are we going to persist at? What I persisted at was sacrificing my personal time to take people through the big book, line by line. I persisted with those actions, and remarkable things happened. I'm going to tell you guys, I tell this to every guy I sponsor, if you can spend an extraordinary amount of time making amends and sacrificing your time to help others, I don't know how it works. I don't know what the spiritual law is, but the universe just starts to like change around you. Like, you know, there's these sayings we have about doors opening and doors closing and opportunities meeting initiative and all these things. But I'm telling, in my experience, the doors that began to open in my life were based upon how much I was giving into the universe. And then there was this, there were times when I realized that, and then there was a battle, an internal battle between, like, is this selfish now? Because I know if I give, I'm going to get, right? And I don't think it really matters to get to some, like, knowing if that's what's going on. Because what's the downside of helping people? I mean, give me a break. There is no downside to helping people, period. All right? If you persist, remarkable things will happen. So my first, I was in corporate America in active addiction, and I lost all three of those jobs. My first 2 years, let's see, April, two and a half years. My first 2.5 years, I worked at a treatment center, and I parked cars as a valet at nice restaurants in this part of Atlanta called Buckhead. And then I got a job in corporate America. And that first job in corporate America was a direct result of my activity and sponsorship. That's how I'd gotten the job. I ended up staying with that company for almost 6 years, and I was very successful with that company. My first marriage, she came into my life, and I was blessed with a woman that did support my recovery. But as Brandon was talking, and he made the comment about us being completely different 5 years ago than we are today, I remember sitting in marriage counseling when my marriage was falling apart, and the woman I was married to, we were talking to the therapist, and she looks at me, she goes, "You're just not the same man I married." And I remember thinking to myself, good, I don't want to be the guy that I was 7 years ago. But what had happened is that the way in which we changed, we no longer had any common interests. But as a result of my activity in this program, the way I was able to handle that whole situation, I think I was able to walk through the divorce with some grace and some dignity, to the point that she and I, I saw her back in around Halloween down in New Orleans, and I had like a 10-15 minute conversation with her, and it was really good to see her, and it was cool. We texted. A really good old friend of mine overdosed and died on Christmas this past year, and she knew I was really close to him, so she reached out to me to see how I was doing, which indicates to me the way we ended it well, okay? I think that is connected to all of the experiences I've had attempting to sponsor men and watching a few of them go through some nasty divorces and like being like, you know what, I don't want to go down that road. Again, that is a byproduct of, because when you sponsor people, you get to sponsor people that are going through so many different dynamics in life. And believe it or not, if we're paying attention, we get to learn through that process. Not only are we trying to carry a message to them so they can recover, we're learning regardless if they receive the message or not. There's something being learned in every interaction. And so if you spend time in this activity, you will gain the same learnings, similar learnings, maybe not the exact same ones. This sentence, I keep looking at it over and over, remarkable things will happen. So back in 2015, I made some inquiries and I put together a business plan. I got to open up this recovery program that was a vision of mine. And it was a dream. And I had it for 3 years, and then circumstances, it went away. But because of the lessons learned in this 12th step, which is not only carrying the message, what Brandon emphasizes, practicing the principles in all our affairs. I had a business partner, and he lost a chunk. He lost a chunk of money in this, and I lost a chunk too. And we're still as close as I think we're closer now on the backside than we were on the front side. Why? Because money can cause relationships to go sideways. And today, he is still one of my favorite people on this planet. And that's because of the activity in the 12th step. So I think 4 years ago, I took a kid through the steps, and I took him up to the seventh step, and he decided he wanted another sponsor, which was cool, and we stayed friends. And then he ended up relapsing, and his fiance at the time and his mom called me, and I went over and did a 12-step call at this condo with two other guys. And man, he was, you know, it was a combination of us trying to take him to detox, him fighting us, not physically, but like, I'm not going, to him being drunk and high at the same time, him getting in his car, getting back out of his car. You know, people get, I mean, it was one of those situations. You're just trying to do everything in your power to get this dude somewhere safe. Anyway, so I spent, you know, we're there hour and a half trying to deal with the situation. And his mom was extremely grateful. Of course, his fiance was grateful. And it was just a positive experience. Well, fast forward, you know, this individual approaches me about 7-8 months ago and says, hey, I want to bring you on board. I want you to, you know, we want you to help us open up a new recovery center. And it's very similar in vision and in the nuts and bolts to what I had at my old recovery center. And but it's very unique in its own way because it's his vision. And I'm just now a team player, which for this guy here, who's typically a captain, being a role player or a team player is a hard thing for me to do. But it's what I think is needed in this situation, because I'm seeing how much of a struggle it is for me to be a team player, to just be, you know, put me in, coach. Where do you need me? You know, just put me in. But because I'm typically the coach. And this is that kid I took through the steps back, you know, 4 years ago, coming to me, that I went and spent time with his mom and his fiance trying to get him some help. And now I'm afforded another opportunity to live this vision and this dream. And again, you know, I'm coming on board. This is not my ship. And again, all of these opportunities, these remarkable things that are happening, are a result of the activity of the 12th step. You know, I've recently fallen in love with this woman, and you know, how did she meet me? I was given a talk. Right, I was giving a talk on a Zoom meeting in the middle of a pandemic. This cracks me up because, like, 20 years down the road, people are gonna be like, "How'd y'all meet?" We met during the time where you were supposed to social distance and shelter in place. You know, we pretty much said "fuck social distancing" and "fuck sheltering in place." but you know, she, my love in carrying this message. For carrying this message, you know, put me in that position where I was able to meet her. I'm looking at big picture, right? And we had a conversation and we hit it off, you know. And she's 7 years sober. She's a big book girl. She sponsors women and does H&I work. And I mean, I love all of those things. So I mean, we've already got so much common ground again. And this is a result of doing the work out of the big book. Had I not done the work out of the big book, nobody would be asking me to say anything. Right? Bill trusts Brandon and I because he knows us personally, but he also knows that we do have this love for carrying this message. And just like I know he does. And that's why we come here. There's that agreement that is... it's not a verbal agreement, but it's an agreement that exists among us anyway. And so I'm sharing all this with you because I do believe in karma. And I don't believe... there's a saying in our rooms that you only keep what you have by giving it away. I disagree with that statement. You'll never get it unless you give it away. You'll never get what I'm talking about unless you attempt to give it away. The funny thing is, this all relates to our first step. Remember the paragraph I broke down on page 24, you know, for most alcoholics, we've lost the power of choice in drink and drug, and our so-called willpower has become practically non-existent at certain times. We can't bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the pain and suffering and the humiliation of a week ago, a month ago. What happens is once you put down the drugs and the alcohol, the further you get away from that last drink and last drug, the fear dissipates. And it becomes more and more difficult for you to access the what happened piece of your story. It's not sufficient now. Because I went to treatment and I would come in on day one and I was shook. I was a shook one on day one. And by day 30, I put on about 15 pounds. And I'm usually working out or doing some type of physical activity. By day 60, the treatment program or halfway house or sober living has asked me to get a job. This is all the programs I went to were structured this way. After 30 days, you had to get a job. And there was always this rec activity, and you worked out at the gym, so you're always physically fit. And by the time I was getting that first paycheck, I knew it was time to see if I could get some women to go out with me, right? And then I get a woman talking.
Maybe one of those women that, like, walking around in the slippers in the treatment.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're in love, right?
Nothing like treatment puppy love.
She understands me.
And so, I start talking to a girl, and I think I've recovered, right? Money, physically fit, practicing serenity, practicing gratitude, woman talking to me. I'm as recovered as I'm ever going to be, right? And I have no connection to day one. So the minute that life throws a trial or a low spot my way, I have nothing as a foundation. So I go back to I have to have an anesthetic because I don't like feeling uneasy. I don't like feeling easily annoyed. And I don't like feeling dissatisfied or the universe has treated me unfairly or someone else has treated me unfairly. And so I go. I activate the phenomenon of craving and off to the races I go. And this is how it went for me. And so in the early days of sponsoring people, I remember like so many experiences. I used to go over to other sober living programs, and I used to go to people's halfway houses, and I'd sit in their bedrooms, or we'd sit in the dining room, and we would read the big book together. And I remember this one kid, Tex. I'll never forget it. I was sitting in the dining room at his sober living apartment, and it hit me with so much force that looking into his eyes, I was looking into my eyes. I was looking in a mirror. And for the first time, and Tex was one of the first guys, I mean, he was in my first year. And I remember being like, holy crap, this was me 9 months ago. I am looking at myself. And so what happened was my day one became very current in front of me. And so what happened is like, huh, this is how I stay connected to the first step. And so when I sponsored, I mean, until to this day, when I sponsor new guys, they always take me back to 12 and a half years ago right now. They take me back. And you know what happens? This little voice in my head says, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to never be where this young man is right now. I want nothing to do with that. And so what happens, it's sort of like completes the circle. My 12th step is not only feeding into his first step, but it's also feeding into my first step. And so now I don't have to worry about bringing into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory, because he's doing it for me. And that's how you connect this whole program. This is what this program is about. It's the jewel of the program. Did you have anything? No. It's the jewel of the program. It says, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands. Well, how did I put myself in God's hands? I said, you know what? I'm just going to pour my heart and my soul into sponsoring as many people as I can and taking them through this process. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to let the chips fall where they may and look where they've fallen. What's happened is far greater than anything I could have imagined on my own. Exactly what the book says. When I put myself in God's hands, the things that happened were better than anything I could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. I was looking at going to prison for 3 years. That was the turning point. I've had a few turning points, but one of the turning points, I know at some point I must have said to myself, and again, I can't access these memories, but I'm sure this happened at one point. You know, do I really want to try to get a job and make a lot of money, or do I want to stay doing what I'm doing and just with all this free time to sponsor people? And for whatever reason, I was moved into the direction of, you know what? It's probably best that I don't get back into corporate America. But one of the two best things that happened to me in early recovery was not going back to corporate America until I was almost 3 years clean and not being in a relationship in my first 3 years. Those were the two greatest gifts God gave me, because I see how difficult it is for guys in early recovery trying to manage relationships, and I see what happens to the guys that want to make up for lost time with money and all the things they've robbed the family of and all of the added stress of that. I didn't have any of that. And therefore, I don't know if it was a conscious decision not to have any of that or an unconscious decision. I think it was a combination of both. But what happened was I placed myself in God's hands. And the way, what that meant, you know, because somebody in here has got to be saying, well, how do you place yourself in God's hands? Well, in terms of our process, we take care of God's kids. All right, and that's what I did. I did what I could. I used my experience with addiction to win the confidence of other guys and do my best to carry them through this process as quickly as possible. And it's one of the things that happens in our rooms in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and Heroin Anonymous, Drug Addicts Anonymous, is there are people that have experiences with this gift, the jewel of our program, which is sponsorship. But there's different degrees of having an experience with it. And there's this thing I've got that I love. It says, Moses said to his household, "Verily, beyond all doubt, I have seen a fire. I will bring you tidings of it, or I will bring you a flaming brand that you may warm yourself." In every esoteric doctrine, now esoteric is like they're traditions and teachings that aren't always available to the masses. They're available usually to a pocket of enthusiasm sometimes. In every esoteric doctrine, there are references to 3 degrees of faith. In this tradition, the 3 degrees are known as the lore of certainty, and the lore is like a story. You hear about things through storytelling. The eye of certainty, where you actually witness it. And then the truth of certainty is where you actually have the experience yourself. The lowest, and we're going to take the difference between them as illustrated by fire. Okay, our fire in this program will represent sponsorship. Right? The fire, I think that's where it is. The jewel, the fire, sponsorship. The lowest degree, that of the storytelling, the lore of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of sponsorship comes merely from hearing stories about it and hearing about it described. Like those who received from Moses no more than tidings about the burning bush. The second degree, that of the eye of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of sponsorship or the fire comes from seeing the light of its flames. When you walk into your home group and there's a guy off in a side room doing step work with one of his sponsees, but you're there for the fellowship, right? You're there for the best fellowship in the West, bar none, right? That's what we do. We want to have a good time. We don't want to get our hands dirty. I've watched this play out. And then we have the highest degree, that of the truth of certainty, which belongs to individuals whose knowledge of sponsorship and the fire comes from being burnt in the fire. This ultimate possibility is represented in the above verse by the direct experience of those who are allowed to warm themselves in the fire. I pray that ye may be consumed by its flames. And, you know, this is what happens. I mean, I wish I could tell you everybody's active in sponsorship, but I just know for a fact that they're not. And now maybe not every, not maybe, not everyone who attends our meetings has to sponsor to stay steam, clean and sober. What happens is I have this, what happened is I discovered that I have to. And I have to, not because I'm worried that I'm not going to stay clean and sober, because sponsorship doesn't keep me clean and sober. God keeps me clean and sober. Sponsorship allows me to maintain a conscious awareness of the presence of God in my life, because that is the power that keeps me sober. So I'm really clear on that. I love Brandon hit on it. AA did not get us sober. The 12 steps did not get us sober. Our home groups did not get us sober. They all were fingers on a hand pointing into a, to a direction to God. Higher power. She, him, her, he, Mother Nature, whatever you want to call it, it makes no difference to me. They're all the same thing, just a different name. So what I invite you to think about is, what's your desire right now? Because I remember the first 3 years when I bounced in and out, zero desire to attempt to, sponsorship? I ain't messing with that. But that last time when the spiritual surrender was there, my ass knew if I did not sponsor, I was dead. So I don't know what's going on with you with that. But Dr. Bob had some famous last words for us. And I love both our co-founders. I don't like one more than the other. I think they're both amazing, amazing human beings that, you know, if they had not followed their paths, none of us would be sitting here right now. My good friends in AA and of AA, I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-iveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength hasn't returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. There are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with all these psychological complexes and Freudian phrases and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, once simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words of love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we're not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us. Thank you very much, Dr. Bob. And thank you very much for having us this weekend.
recovered crack cocaine addict. Boo! I love the energy.
Wow.
Man, I'm going to share something as we wrap up. I want to share something about me. I'd like to share something about you. I'd like to share something about them. I'd like you to consider how it's all connected. So this is our fifth year together, our fifth summer together, and I was looking back on last year, and we were sitting in my office and kind of just chopping up about where we were at in some of the areas of our lives, and I found myself in a self-imposed crisis. I know that's a real shocker, and what I didn't know is that I was experiencing something that one of their friends calls dark night of the soul. And it's an interesting space, sober, you know. And I was asleep, and I didn't know it, right? And, man, I was in a tough spot. I'd been commuting every Wednesday night to my home group in Sandy Springs, and I was struggling with some of that. And it was just a wonderful experience until it was really difficult. And I was up against, what am I going to do here? You know, it was hard for me. But it was, legit self-imposed crisis, right? And I look back on, we had a conversation. We didn't not only know if we were going to see them in this capacity again, we didn't know if they were going to sit together again. Is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of, there's some things going on. And so what I offer you is, but 1 year later, here we sit. Here they sit. Why is that, right? 1 year later, I'm as lit as I've ever been in recovery. Ever. Why is that? I'd ask you to consider that as we start making some of these connections, right? One of the things I can tell you is this. It's like, I don't know if we will see you next year, right? But one thing for certain, there is no doubt, from my perspective, that has nothing to do with whether they're sober or not. Has nothing to do with that. Why is that? The man that is sitting next to him, there's no doubt in his mind that he's going to be available sober should they decide to do this again. Same thing for him. There's no doubt he's going to be sober 1 year from now. If, in fact, there's a decision to do that. It has nothing to do with being sober. Same thing with him and the guy back there. I have no doubt they will be available to do whatever's, you know, on their heart to do 1 year from now. That we know. There's no doubt. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about permanent recovery. So why is that? Why can I say something like that? Why can we feel that way? So I'm going to ask you, where you're sitting, where are you at? What's 1 year look like for you? And why is that you feel whatever it is you're feeling when I ask that question? What about the guy sitting next to you? Where are you at with that? And why? How is this all connected, right? I ask you to consider this. It's not my duty. I'm going to mess with my own words. I'm not expected by the people that employ me to have this weekend with you. Yet, here we are. Why is that? These two gentlemen are not required to sit here with you this weekend. But here they are. Why is that? And how is all of this connected? I invite you to take that into some contemplation, some prayer, and meditation, and use this experience as a launching pad for where you're headed next. That's an invitation and a challenge. It's yours to have. Okay. That was pretty impressive. But I'd like to hear one more time what you really feel about their
service. Yeah.
I love you guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.